buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do. Florida wins.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Two former coaches talking ball, solving the world's problems, and basically been undefeated for a good long period of time. If you have questions, we have answers. D squared, how was your week? Because I'll tell you one thing. You were full court pressing college basketball.
Sether, between you and me, we had it covered, brother. And I got to tell you, college basketball is much, much better for it. I had a great week. Maui, had a good time with Billis, went to Portland, had a good time with my wife and kids, smelt a lot of weed as I walked around, as it's legal there. And I didn't say I smoked a lot of weed. I said I smelt a lot of weed, for those of you asking. But no, it was really good, different. Duke impressed. Michigan State guarded. Florida, to me, is a Final Four team. The Zags are a Final Four. I got about 10 Final Four teams.
But right, so you're already being in the studio then, because I'm in the studio. We put everyone in the second weekend team in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Damn, just like that.
Yes.
In a New York minute. Yeah, it's greatest.
Yes.
You know, let's start with Maui.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. How good is Wichita State? Final Four team?
Wasn't as impressed with them as I wanted to be. I know everybody is. I don't think so. I know I'm supposed to be. And when McDuffie comes back, probably good enough. I think they're very good. I think they're very tough. I think the coaches are no business, you know, obviously. Greg Marshall's a great dude. But I like Notre Dame better. I like Michigan on the come. I think Michigan's going to get much, much better because of Charles Matthews and his athletic ability. And then the coach, obviously, huge fan of Matt Farrell. But I was not as shot in the backside as most are about Wichita State. I see where they're going to beat people. I would expect them to compete, if not win the league. But I'm not sure they're as good as some of the teams that I've seen. You?
Yeah, it's so hard to evaluate them without Marcus McDuffie, because McDuffie's an electric athlete. He can score it. He's an elite defender. He can block shots. He gets some easy baskets in transition. He gets easy baskets on the offensive glass. He takes some pressure off of Shaq Morris, which I think is really important. Landry Shamet, you know, speaking of Greg before the tournament, you saw him in person. You know, he did not think – he thought he was about 75%. I thought he showed flashes. They're going to get tested. Look, the American has got good teams. Temple's a better team, even though I was surprised they lost to LaSalle the other night. I think Cincinnati, with their toughness and they're difficult to play against with the matchup zone and the press, and Jerron Cumberland and Gary Clark are really good players. I'm a little worried about their point guard play. But Notre Dame, you mentioned, and they're interesting to me because, one, he's the happiest coach in America. Like, he's so normal, he's abnormal, Mike Bray. I mean, with shirt on, with T-shirt on, with shirt off, it makes no difference. Bonzi's a brutal matchup. I think T.J. Gibbs got to get a little more consistent. They got to know what they're going to get out of him. Same with the D.J. Harvey. But there's no denying those two guys, Farrell and Bonzi, are just different than others, and they make them that much harder to play against.
Notre Dame, to me, is the most connected team I've seen, man. They compete. They play hard. You're right about Bray. I hosted a coach's – it was like a big banquet, and I was thinking to myself, man, these coaches are awesome. Could you imagine if you had Bob Knight up there and, you know, some of the old curmudgeons? I mean, these dudes were just – they were having a great time, and – they were fun, and nobody was more fun than Mike Bray. So, yeah, I just think he's really comfortable with a player-led team. I think he's comfortable that they will guard you. I know he loves his offense, which he should. Colson is really good. But I just feel like them being connected, man, and as you said forever, they're the oldest team in college basketball every year. I just like them. I just like their vibe. I've said this about two teams, Duke and Notre Dame. people can play Duke and Notre Dame well. Like, Texas has Duke down 18. Portland State, Duke has to go to the zone. Portland State's up at halftime. It's another thing to beat them. It's another thing to go ahead, finish the game, and I feel the exact same way about Notre Dame. Somewhat dead in the water against Wichita State, then all of a sudden, bam, here comes a steal by Farrell. It's one thing to play them. It's one thing to play them well. It's one thing to say, oh, look, they're not that good. They had to go to zone. Okay, fine. But it's another thing to finish them off, man. I just don't know that you can finish them off. I will not be surprised. This is a dumb statement, but I'm not going to be surprised if Duke doesn't run the regular season undefeated. I mean, I guess I will be surprised, but it's they look that good to me, that improved, and that physically tough. It's going to be so interesting. Beating them's a whole other thing than playing well with them for 35 minutes.
Oh, no, because they have so many ways to beat you. I mean, like, think about the second half against Florida. When those two big guys were in there together, and they could play post to post. And one thing that surprised me about Bagley, he's a really good interior passer. He rebounds balls out of his area. He chases. The ball finds him, it seems like. You know, and then he's going to have to play around because, I mean, the one thing we've seen when people have played two bigs, and we saw it with Arizona trying to play two bigs with Ayton and Rustic, it makes it hard to guard. It makes it hard to guard the way people play offensively today because with all the spread ball screens, with all the drive and kick, with all the multiple paint touches, with all the way, you know, people come at you and open up the floor, you're going to have to play more than one defense. And I actually think, and I've told all the guys that are coaching friends of mine, everyone needs to have a zone in their back pocket. You got to have a zone in your back pocket because you know what? The way the game's officiated, the way the game is coached today, you got to have a tempo changer. You got to have something there that you just, whether it's for 5 minutes, for four possessions, out of a timeout or whatever, to disrupt the tempo of the game. And I do believe that what you're saying about Duke. Now, Duval made a big three. I don't think he's a three-point shooter, but at the end of that game against Florida, the two defensive possessions Duke had, the two steals they had, it just shows that Gary Trent Jr. and Trayvon Duval are capable on-ball defenders. How long can they defend? How long a period of time? Like most freshmen, it takes a while for them to be able to learn how to compete, a longer period of time. But look, they're good. Now, how about PK80, just the event in general?
I wish I had it every year. I wish Adidas would put one on next year. It's going to be interesting. Mark Hollis, the AD at Michigan State, came up to me. I was broadcasting the last game. He came up. We were just sitting talking, and he said, look, this needs to happen in Indy. He goes, this needs to happen every year. This needs to happen in Indy. I said, okay, where are we putting it? He goes, well, we put it in the convention center. So Mark and other people, I know Adidas is already thinking about it. People are thinking about it. It was such a good event. It was so well done right across the parking lot, like loading dock, and there you are in the other building. Teams were great. The travel for the fans, not so great. I didn't do a Portland game. I think they brought some people. Butler brought some people. Obviously Gonzaga. But Gonzaga fans, I tell you what, Seth, they'll get after you. They're a little Michigan State-ish, man. They ain't afraid. I asked.
I thought you were coming around. I mean, you said something about Mark Hollis. I thought we were going to have a kumbaya moment and say, you know what, we've moved on. Life is good. Everyone, you know, can work together, be happy, you know. And all of a sudden, then you got to compare Gonzaga's fans to Michigan State's fans. You're killing me.
Well, I am. Hey, look, you can't complain about everything. You can't be slighted always. I mean, you can't. They have a great team, and they have a rabid fan base. And they traveled well. Oregon traveled well, not so much the last day because it was, you know, kind of an early morning game. Butler did. Actually, if you really want to know the truth, and I've said this on my radio show, Butler fans embarrassed themselves. Butler fans, the swearing and every single, I was like, wait a second. What happened to Butler? Like, you're supposed to act above all this. The Butler way, baby. Every call. I mean, officials are looking at me like, can you believe these people? But the event itself was tremendous, and you know, Duke, Michigan State come out of it. Michigan State guards like that, they're national champion good. Duke is national champion good. Probably North Carolina. I've never seen. All right, let me ask you this: have you seen a North Carolina team get throttled like that?
No, shoot! I wish I did it once or twice. I wouldn't be talking to you. I just thought it was the first of all, the physicality was two different worlds. I thought the young front court of end of Carolina wasn't ready for the physicality of their front court.
Right.
Josh Langford making shots early was probably a little bit of a shock. That was the best I've seen him play. And that Michigan State, it, you know, like we always talk about checking the boxes, take him out of transition, check, kept him off the glass, check, contained Joel Berry, check, beat them in the paint, check. So the only thing they didn't do is they obviously they pitched it around 24 times. But, I mean, if you talk about the things that Michigan State needed to do or anyone needs to do to beat Carolina, they did that. I'll tell you another team, though, that had some problems getting beat. And that's Arizona. I mean, Arizona turning it over, not guarding the ball. Chemistry's bad, trying to play the two bigs. Parker Jackson Cotright. I have a philosophy on little guards. Tell me if you agree with this one. If you're a little guard, you better be disruptive. You better be disruptive defensively, getting under people, bothering them, turning them, harassing them. And then offensively, you got to be disruptive in terms of getting downhill, getting a lane, making plays, having a lot of different layups, kind of like a Chris Chioza. I don't see that in Arizona. I don't see a chemistry in Arizona. And for the first time ever, I saw an Arizona team that did not compete defensively. I'm not sure how much you got a chance to see them, but what was your take on them?
I saw them. I saw them against Purdue, getting ready for the Purdue game, and I couldn't agree more. Seth, they had no interest in guarding. They looked like they would have rather been anywhere else. Now, I will say this. When the FBI comes to call them, bad things are going to happen to you. I mean, I'm just telling you.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
You know, so, but I saw what you, I thought defensively it was shocking to me because let's be honest, they've got ability. I mean, they got a couple pros. Dakota Mathias, what he held the Trier kid to 10 shots. I mean, hell, 10 shots is nothing for that kid. I just felt like I'm watching a team that is disconnected completely. Now, let me ask you a question. You're Purdue. The tournament goes the way it goes. Is it better long term? Now this is gonna assume that Arizona's good, really good. Is it better to have beaten Arizona and lost to those two teams, or beaten those two teams and lost to Arizona when we get to March in terms of getting into the NCAA tournament, seeding for NCAA tournament? Will Arizona become a team that becomes a really good win for Purdue? Yes or no?
Arizona will end up a good win for Purdue. As long as Purdue doesn't lose to any of the bottom of the Big Ten, because the Big Ten's got a bottom right now, I don't think it's an issue. They end up with a quality top 20 win, and, you know, Western Kentucky's
going to
win some games.
They'll be competitive
in their conference. I don't think they'll be a top 10 win. No, I don't. Even when they get Raleigh Alkins back, I don't think it's going to be top 10. I just don't like – I think there's too many distractions. Now, Alkins changes him because he can really defend and he plays hard. But – you know, my gut feeling is, all right, so you decide that Ayton's going to be your five, and you're going to play a little smaller so you can guard a little bit better, which, you know, makes sense. And then all of a sudden, you know, you play maybe Ayton a little bit at four, but now you got Dušan Ristić, who's, you know, a 10.8 rebound guy. Is he buying in? I don't know. I mean, is he buying in? I mean, how are you going to keep that team on the same page with all the static that's going to surround it? I think it's a very tough situation for Sean Miller to be in. It's tough to recruit for him right now. It's tough for him to hold anything over his team. I think his team is right now looking at each other, wondering, you know, are we going to be able to play the NCAA tournament? Are we not? You know, how many more times are these people, if they have been in or haven't been in, how many more times are they going to come in? When's the NCAA going to come in? You know, all those things hang over you. You can say kids have short-term memories and, you know, they're only worried about themselves. They are. And they all want to play in the tournament, and they all worried about themselves, and they all worried about their careers following the season. So, I my gut feeling is that Arizona will get fixed to an extent, but I'm not sure they're going to get healed. And I think they need to get healed, and I don't see them getting healed is my gut feeling. Now, we've got some games next week. You got the ACC Big Ten going on, and the ACC is absolutely smacking the Big Ten right now. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I was actually impressed with Louisville in a loss because I think that their length at the rim is good. They have a chance to be an elite defensive team. I think they need a little bit more discipline in what they're trying to do offensively. Like, I couldn't tell you what their identity is offensively. I think some guys have a little bit too much freedom offensively. Now, I'm going to see him against Seton Hall on Sunday. because they love to put me on games that go up against the NFL. I'm big against the NFL. But I mean, that's going to be a terrific game. I'm excited to do that game. But I was impressed with Louisville. And even after Purdue lost, I said, I like Purdue. And what you were saying about Dakota Mathias, man, I'll tell you one thing. He's their best player. I mean, you can talk about Carson Edwards zigging and zagging. And, I think he's got to be patiently aggressive, Carson Edwards. I think he's impatiently aggressive. You know, he tries to make stuff when stuff's not there. He attacks, you know, small gaps. He's got that mentality that makes him good. Also, you know, you get that green light, you can't abuse it. I think he abuses it a little bit. Dakota Mathias, he just moves without the ball, makes the right pass, makes a shot, puts his nose in things, gets his eye bloodied up, comes back, plays, chases Dengadel around, and helps him win. That's my take on that.
Well, that's exactly right. I just think, you know, I asked them what happened. You know, what happened with Tennessee? They felt like they got out-muscled against Tennessee. I asked them what happened with Western Kentucky, and they were very honest. They said, look, I don't think we took them serious. I think we were feeling ourselves. I said, you're feeling yourselves after you just got beat? He goes, yeah, sounds dumb, but yes, absolutely. So, you know, at the end of the day, Purdue, I think, Minnesota, and Michigan State look to me like they're going to carry the mantle of the Big Ten because, as you said, man, the Big Ten getting smacked. I mean, smacked around.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it will be interesting. I agree. Minnesota's really good. But I'll tell you, next Tuesday, we got the Jimmy V Classic. Madison Square Garden, world's most famous arena, Villanova, Gonzaga, Syracuse, UConn. We're going to be there for a little Jay Will and myself will be there for a little pregame college game day, mini college game day. Games are going to be on radio, ESPN radio. And, you know, we ask people to join the ESPN, the V Foundation to achieve victory over cancer. Please, if you can, anything helps, v.org/donate. If you can and you're listening to this podcast and you enjoy what we're talking about, let me tell you something. Jimmy V was a guy that was ahead of himself. He always thought of others, even in his darkest days. Every single dollar goes to cancer research. That their foundation is completely endowed. So please, if you can, please donate to the V Foundation, v.org/donate. And how about the games? Gonzaga, Villanova, Syracuse, UConn. Old school Big East in the nightcap. And then Villanova, who does not beat themselves against those Gonzagas, who they just they're the Notre Dame of the West. They stay old. They got toughness. They've got size. They're a good passing team. Man, they're good.
Jonathan Williams has the quickest first step maybe in college basketball. He's 6'9". Gets to the rim. I love Jonathan Williams of Gonzaga. I like Gonzaga's team. I thought Perkins was great. Unfortunately for my son, when my son came in, Perkins got hot as Hazel. And Young Jr. got a dose of what his dad felt like many, many times playing college basketball, where an opponent looked at you and said, no chance, son, and just lifted up and started making shots. But I love Gonzaga's team, man. I think they're a Final Four team. I do. Cuse looked pretty good against Maryland. Kevin Herter shooting bombs to keep them close, but I don't think I can name you one guy other than Tyus Battle right now on Syracuse's team, but I liked watching them. I thought they were fun. Let me ask you this. You look at Gonzaga, and this is interesting to me for a small Catholic school in the Northwest. They lost some guys last year. They lost a kid that they, I don't think, were expecting to lose at all, right? Zach Collins, and all of a sudden he's a top 10 pick in the NBA draft. And now I think they're every bit as good. Will they get to the Final Four? Who knows? But I think they're every bit as good. I really do, Seth. I just think it's an outstanding team. It's interesting that you're able to do that in a little school in the Northwest. It really is. It's fascinating.
They've created a niche. They've done a great job recruiting internationally. They've become a chic school in the West Coast where they get, especially the Pacific Northwest, and they've been able to keep guys home. And even California. They've got an unbelievable fan base, as you saw. They travel. Mark Few is a terrific coach, but he's playing against the Villanova team now. This Villanova team, Mikal Bridges, right in front of our eyes, is playing at an elite level. Jalen Brunson is like, he's just like a maestro. If they can get their front court just to be a little bit more productive, Amari Spellman's going to be a terrific player. He has sat out all last year. He's still finding his feet. Eric Pascal's a freakish athlete that runs and jumps and tries to dunk everything around the basket. You know, Phil Booth was, the most outstanding player of the championship game 2 years ago. So Villanova, they guard you. They control the tempo with that little half-court trap. It'll be a challenge for them to match up in the front court in terms of rebounding the basketball. But that has the makings. Let me tell you something. That has the makings of an incredible game. And it fits into the Greenberg philosophy because I think that the Big East should stay the Big East and they should add Gonzaga. Not sure, maybe St. Mary's and have a little West Coast run. Dayton and St. Louis and become a mega conference. Split off in half. You play the other half once. You play your half twice. And you become basically the private school super conference that can compete with anyone and be a conference that can get 9 and 10 bids a year. How about that one for you?
And the mascot is Bryant Reeves, and you call it Big Country, no longer Big East. You just say, hey, man, you can have your Bulldog, you can have your whatever, but you got to have Big Country at every game. Every school has to have a Big Country mascot because we are Big Country. I would tell you a recruiting story when Coach and I went to see. I sent him to see Big Country.
How did it go?
Well, it went all right, but he was literally under a car. He was under a car on one of those things on wheels, fixing up whatever you do underneath the car. Maybe he's changing oil. And he wheels out, and he looks at Coach Knight and goes, "Woo-wee, Bobby Knight, you did come here." And they had a great visit, and then he went to Oklahoma State. So there you go. But he's the only recruit ever to be under a car when Coach Knight walked up. Or I walked. I've never had a kid under a car. You?
First of all, if you get under, I'm surprised they were able to get him back.
I agree. That
was a big dude. But you know who we're going to get back? When we come back, we're going to have the most normal coach in America that he's abnormal. He's the happy coach, and that is Notre Dame head coach Mike Bray. But before we get Coach Bray, I'll tell you one thing. Blue apron, ridiculous, out of control. In fact, I had to go work in the studio yesterday, so Karen Greenberg whipped up a quick blue apron. I'm telling you, the vegetables, unbelievable. The salmon, to die for, as they say in New York. Unbelievable, easy to put together. I could have made it, although I deferred. But it's quick, it's easy, it's delicious. I'll tell you one thing. There's nothing better than Blue Apron. I'll tell you, the menu changes every week based on what's in season, which is so good. Designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. Blue Apron offers 12 new recipes each week. That's crazy. That's too much variety. You know what? That's like having to put a sub in a game. Like, what do you pick? Who do you pick? You got too many guys. That's why I always like to have 8 guys, 1 point guard, 1 wing guy, 1 front court guys. I didn't like that many options. But Blue Apron, they give you options. And customers can pick out 2, 3, 4 recipes based on what best fits their schedule. What do you think about that? You know what? Hey, Dan, November? Tell me you wouldn't like seared steak and garlic butter with oven fries and romaine salad. How much would you like that? Butter squash pasta with kale. You can't have enough kale. And brown butter walnuts. Blue Apron sends only non-GMO ingredients and meat with no added hormones. Blue Apron is treating Courtside with Seth Greenberg and Dan Dockich listeners to their first dinner, a $30 value, if you visit blueapron.com/Seth. So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off with free shipping at blueapron.com/Seth. Blue Apron.
A better way to cook.
Dan, we'd like to welcome in with who I call the happiest coach in America. With shirt, with t-shirt, with mock turtle, sport coat, or unfortunately with no shirt. And that is the head coach of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, Mike Bray. Mike, thank you for spending some time with us on your bus ride, because I know Notre Dame's big time, to East Lansing. How's life?
We are en route, buddy. We're about an hour in and traveling the beautiful Midwest, as Dan Dockich knows so well, but certainly huge challenge. But we're excited by a great team and an unbelievable atmosphere. I've never been in the atmosphere. You know, I've only been in the building one time, and that was to watch Torrey Jackson win the high school state championship. I certainly have watched it and heard about it. So from what I understand, it's one of the great atmospheres of college basketball.
I had the pleasure of watching your team in Hawaii, and I got to tell you, man, you've talked about it with me, and I know with Seth about being old, but if you wouldn't mind telling the people, you said it, this is a player-run team. Would you explain that to people checking out this podcast?
You know, Dan, I think what we've always tried to achieve, and I've been able to do it because I don't have guys leaving early. We've got guys growing up at the program, and there's an expectation as a junior and senior to really – you know, set the standards, reinforce the standards, help the young guys. And it's the ultimate of a group taking ownership of itself. And certainly this year's rotation of Monty Colson and Matt Farrell, they have everybody by the throat in that locker room. And, as you know, it's just so powerful when it comes from within. And we're in one of those great rotations of leadership this year.
To that point, I'm watching, everybody's talking about Bonzi Colson, and they should. He's got what he deserves. But honest to God, Coach, can you talk about the play of Matt Farrell? I thought he was just dynamite all week.
Man, he was unbelievable for us out there. You know, the one time I took him out for a longer rest in the first half against LSU, LSU went on like a 9-0 run. It's almost impossible to have him off the floor, you know, with what he does for us. He's just directing traffic, quarterbacking. And he's understood. It took me a while early in the season. He's got to hunt his shot early for us. You know, he can't defer to other guys. And so he's combined scoring and distributing really well for us.
You have this challenging schedule. You're traveling all over the country. You got this senior team. And this is a serious question. Most guys, no matter how much they like their team or how successful they are, they have – a worry about them. They're waiting for the next problem. Yet you seem to be able to keep things in perspective. What's the gift of keeping things in perspective?
You know, I think I don't know if I'm much different than other guys. You know, you come back from Maui and you're thinking, you know, okay, how can this be screwed up right now? We've got a great locker room. We've got great attitudes. You're always worried about that. I think I've tried to, and maybe, you know, more lately than early in my career, is, you know, be positive and be a confidence-giving guy. And I think that's helped guys get better over time with us. You know, the kind of kids we get need some confidence and need to be encouraged. And so, you know, that's probably keeps me in a good frame of mind. And it kind of gets you into that mood that's maybe a little happier and more positive.
Well, happy and more positive. You're on your way to Lansing. Obviously, you talk about a great environment, a great atmosphere. One or two things that say, you know what? If we do X and Y in the last 4 minutes, we're going to have a chance to win this game.
I think it starts, Seth, with our transition defense. They just come barreling down the floor on you and really run, and we got to get back to that. And I think handling the early games first, the games I've watched there, they've jumped on people early, and then the crowd's going crazy, and then people are digging out of a hole. And then we've got a rebound. I think this group, more than any group that I have, can hold their own with just about anybody on the backboard. They did with Wichita State. They did with LSU's athletic front line. It's another test of defensive rebounding against Michigan State's front line.
Have you coached against Coach Izzo? You're going up against his teams?
Yeah, Danny, we played him in the challenge 3 years ago. It was an unbelievable game at our place. We won in overtime. That was Grant and Connaughton's senior year. Went to overtime, and we, you know, kind of snuck out of there with the win. So that's the only time I've coached against Tom. He's obviously a great friend. We're on the NABC board together. You know, we share a lot of laughs and on the road together in the summer. Obviously just one of the great guys and a good friend and one of the good guys in our profession. Really, really love him as a coach and a person.
You coached against him a few years ago, but they don't change much. I mean, have you noticed that? Like, they do the same stuff. They run that inside big, little on big screen after they hit the high post. I mean, they've been running the same crap and kicking people's backside with it for 20 years. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's amazing, and that's why I have so much respect. You know what you're going to see. You know what you're going to get. Tom does not experiment. He gets those guys in there. He puts them in his meat grinder, and they're going to grind up everybody else. I've been really cool to watch it close up. You know, since I've been out here in kind of Big Ten country living in Indiana, you see a lot and hear a lot of Michigan State, and it just never wavers. And, you know, I was looking at a thing in our game notes. They've been to 20 straight NCAA tournaments. Are you kidding me? 20 straight NCAA tournaments. That's just, come on, you're going to have a year or two where something happens. That's just amazing right there, that stat.
It is incredible. But, you know, what you've done is pretty amazing also. And you talk about staying old and what you're trying to do with your team. I mean, you know, how do you get guys in today's culture? I think the hardest thing is to balance classes. And how do you get guys to buy into being patient, understand that time will come? To, you know, how do you get guys to say, well, it worked for him, but you know, most times the static around guys, it's not going to work for me. How does that work?
Two things have really helped me, Seth. You know, number one, especially lately, the last 6 or 7 years, young guys that aren't playing can look to an example in the locker room of 7 or 8 guys that are in the rotation that all went through what they're going through. And so those guys in the junior and senior class, Fonzie Colson and Matt Farrell, were in that seat, help keep those younger guys' attitudes right and believe in it and let them understand there is a plan for them. The other thing that really helps me is our academics here. The kids we get, one of the big reasons they wanted to come was a degree from this place. And as much as you may be complaining about playing time as a freshman or sophomore during a year, it gets to the spring and now you've got a real decision to make. It. You're 2 years in to a Mendoza business degree at Notre Dame. All of a sudden, the thinking starts to change a little bit, and guys want to hear more about my plan for them the next year.
When you unleashing Jogo or Gojo? When is he going to be the next guy? I watched him in practice, man. That's Manu Ginobili part two, although maybe part four, but part two.
Yeah, you know what? He's right on the – you know, he's like my 10th guy. He's been fabulous in practice. There's a lot to work with. We redshirted him last year. It, you know, those three guards that start are eating up a lot of minutes, and then Harvey's giving us good stuff on the perimeter off the bench. But you're right. I mean, we got to. He's one of those guys you got to keep interested and not lose him right now because it's a long season, and I bet he's going to be in there before it's over.
And, Mike, the ACC, how good is it going to be this year? Is it down? I mean, how good is it this year as you start to look at the thing?
You know, I mean, we've got the depth again. I mean, we've got the depth of 8, 9 NCAA tournament teams again. There's no question about it. And, you know, I start looking at who has what in repeat opponents because, you know, that can really have a bearing on your double buys and if you finish in the top 7 and if you get a bid ultimately. I start right around before Christmas, I start looking at everybody's, you know, repeats, their 4 repeats. But I think the power of the league, certainly we've done a hell of a job in our conference. We've gotten off to a great start in the challenge at 6-1. You know, I think we're going to be, I think if you can mark it down, we're going to get 8 every year. And then I think we're going to hit 9 and maybe 10 like that old Big East did not that long ago.
You go get this kid, Harvey. Now, I love this kid. This is another one of your kids. He's from DeMatha, the same place as you. When you go get a kid, and Seth was talking about, you know, and you were talking about being old. Like, do you have to explain to a kid that, hey, this isn't a one-and-done situation? Because you're recruiting at a high level. It's not like you're taking kids that were going to go to the MAC.
Well, his was, you know, he was more of a higher-rated guy than probably some of the guys we have on the roster. The thing, my biggest selling point with him was on losing Vastori and Beecham. You know, they're both leaving, and so the opportunity for you. Now, right now, you know, Gibbs and Pfluger start on the perimeter for us, but he's playing 20 minutes a game, and I think that eventually I bet will go up as he gets more comfortable because he's just hard to keep off the floor. But in that case, you know, you were really able to sell, you know, some playing time. And I'm really excited about the class we signed earlier in the month. I mean, they're really a gifted group. We signed 5 guys, and all of them will want to play right away. But next year, my rotation will be a little bit different in that I'm losing 4 seniors. We'll still have returning guys, but we'll be a little younger than we've usually been with those 5 guys, and we've only had 4 one other time. So this is a little new for us. Now, the ones that are coming are really gifted, and that's why next summer is a great time for a foreign tour. We're going to do that because I think we need the extra head start on the season with some of the young guys.
You know, when you look at a kid, and you know, you're known as an offensive guy, you're known as a guy that will change offensive styles, you know, that whole thing. Taking the academics out and the character and all that kind of stuff, what are you looking for? First thing, basketball-wise.
You know, feel for the game, Danny. Does a guy feel for the game? I think you can really tell with how a guy passes the ball. Does he have court vision? Does he see? What does he see? Does he see plays? Is he good with the ball? You know, it's one of the things, I mean, obviously you need your guards to be good with the ball, but we've really tried to stress, you know, recruiting and then developing big guys that are good with the ball. Right now, six games in, all our big guys have a positive assist-to-turnover ratio. That doesn't happen, you know, very much. I mean, they're all, you know, Devin and Polson are good with the ball, and, you know, that's the thing we really harp on, you know, taking care of it, not turning it over, and feel for the game. And, you know, if you have feel for the game, guys, who can pass it and understand, then you can give them some freedom to play because they know how to play a little bit. You don't have to control as much of the stuff. And, you know, we've been really in a good rotation of basketball IQ guys.
That's a credit to your staff because I think two most undervalued parts of recruiting is evaluation. And the second is assistant coaches who know who can play for that head coach and fit the system. And your staff has done an incredible job understanding you and the players that can play for you, can play for Notre Dame, and have done a great job of evaluating guys, what I call evaluating guys up, seeing the best version of guys a year or two down the line, which is, to me, one of the hardest things to do in recruiting.
No, it's a great point, Seth. I've been really blessed, you know, and I've had changeover in my staff, but now I've got all my former guys back on the staff that I coached, so they really have a feel. And the other thing that's kind of happened nationally now is people call up, certainly AAU programs and high school programs, say, Mike, this is a Notre Dame guy. You got to look at him. You know, they've watched us now for a number of years. They get on us early. I got a ninth grader over here that's going to be perfect for you. You got to get on him. You know, you get a lot of those calls, which you appreciate. Really, I've been blessed with staff, and it's been neat having my former guys around. You know, I've got all guys here. And all of them played at different times, different eras together. So, you know, they'll bring up a story and say, you know, Brian Ayers will go, Coach, how come we don't do that drill we used to do when I was here? And I'll say to myself, you know, I don't know why we don't. And we're stupid because we don't do it. Why did we forget about that? They have some institutional memory that's been kind of cool stuff they bring up.
So normal is abnormal. Very much different than Dockett and myself back in the day. I can tell you that much.
I love it, buddy. Well, I'm heading north. I'll see you in Indy, I'm sure.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care.
I'd like to thank Mike Bray for joining us. He's so normal, he almost made us normal, Dan. I've got a kind of an interesting week. I'm going to be the third spoke at Notre Dame and Michigan State. Got a little Louisville hoops against a very good Seton Hall team on Sunday. What's your schedule, my friend?
I'm going as a dad on Saturday to watch Wisconsin to watch Ohio State play Wisconsin. And Sunday I'm headed to Happy Valley. I think it's Happy Valley. Yeah, it's Happy Valley for a Monday Wisconsin against Penn State game. So, yeah, we got a lot to do, but it's fun, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Penn State's pretty good. Lamar Stevens, Tony Carr, that team's pretty good. They could be, as Wisconsin and some others are struggling, Penn State could be the team maybe to emerge. But D-Squared had an incredible, incredible weekend. And we look forward to everyone tuning in. Downloading us on any which way you download your podcasts, and we'll hook up with you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.